So, good evening. We're roughly midway through the 28th chapter in The Life Divine, Supermind, Mind, and the Overmind Maya. And he was describing, when we last read his material, how the Overmind takes the coherence, the completeness, the integrity, but the oneness and the many-sidedness too, of the supramental consciousness, as it itself draws from the infinity of Satchit-Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, and lends expression in terms of existence, but poses itself in many ways, lends itself in forceful formation, but in many ways, establishing forms of consciousness and truth, and also derives a many-splendored delight from this self-expression. So Satchit-Ananda is expressed through this over-mental consciousness. And yet, it is not identical to the supramental. But he gives it a kind of a rounded summation in that last sentence that we met. Let's go back to that. Overmind thus gives to the one existence consciousness bliss the character of a teeming of infinite possibilities which can be developed into a multitude of worlds or thrown together into one world in which the endlessly variable outcome of their play is the determinant of the creation, of its process, its course, and its consequence. If I may be permitted to take a quick departure from the text, you may remember that when Sri Aurobindo was a student at Cambridge, he studied advanced mathematics. A determinant in mathematics is used in simultaneous equations. You know, you arrange a square of quantities, and the values are determined by a rule of combination, and depending on whether they're plus or minus, certain transpositions follow, and the order of each column is arrived at, and you have a summation and then a final sum of everything. So just so, out of the teeming possibilities of the overmental consciousness, we arrive finally at one world. It's a derivation. So in a sense, Sri Aurobindo may be sliding into this wonderful prose, a mathematical concept. So I thought it might be worth looking at that. Also, the idea of this determinant being a square is significant, because in the symbolism that Mother and Sri Aurobindo have brought to the picturing of what is the supramental consciousness, they said the square is the best representation of it. Square has four sides. Four is the number of manifestation. So a lot of symbolism comes together in that last sentence, and I suppose we're ready now to start this week's work. Since the consciousness force of the eternal existence is the universal creatrix, the nature of a given world will depend on whatever self-formulation of that consciousness expresses itself in that world. Equally, for each individual being, his seeing or representation to himself of the world he lives in will depend upon the poise or make which that consciousness has assumed in him. So again, consciousness force, that's the chit shakti, the essential vision and power of the divine consciousness as it stands is a triunity, satchit ananda. But consciousness force coming to the front, eternal. And as it is true universally, it stands also true individually. Our human mental consciousness, he says, sees the world in sections cut by the reason and sense and put together in a formation which is also sectional. The house it builds is planned to accommodate one or another generalized formulation of truth, but excludes the rest or admits some only as guests or dependents in the house. So if there is a vast house, and I suppose we can see it as a cube if we like, there's a room inside, and this is the room that the mind claims for itself, and it says, this is true. All else is false. The rest of the house doesn't exist. I deny reality. I deny self-same equality to the rest of what is stationed here around me. This is the way the mind works, by division, by separation. Where a spiritual consciousness, a truly creative spiritual consciousness, understands all, sees them all as facets of a single truth, harmonizes them, and embraces them all. This, of course, is what the overmind does to an extent. Let's continue. Overmind consciousness is global in its cognition and can hold any number of seemingly fundamental differences together in a reconciling vision. But it's a carefully chosen term, a reconciling vision, because somehow this diversity has emerged from the overmind, but it is not part of a spontaneous and automatic unity. In a way, it is coming back and constructing, or looking at it and regarding it as a unity. Remember, in the supramental consciousness, the diversity arises in perfect balance with the oneness, and is always figured inside the reality of the self, which is one, even when it is stationed in the many. The many are all the one, looking at each other and standing as the impartible one too. But here in the overmind, diversity is giving maximum expression, and each diverse element has a truth behind it, and overmind is supporting that. And reconstructing, reconciling, so that they can all cohere. Thus, the mental reason sees person and the impersonal as opposites. It conceives an impersonal existence in which person and personality are fictions of the ignorance or temporary constructions. Or on the contrary, it can see person is the primary reality, and the impersonal as a mental abstraction or only stuff or means of manifestation. So, is there a sheer existence at the basis of the cosmos, or is there a personality at the basis of the cosmos? The overmind view can support either. To the overmind intelligence, these are separable powers of the one existence which can pursue their independent self-affirmation and can also unite together their different modes of action, creating both in their independence and in their union different states of consciousness and being, which can be all of them valid and all capable of coexistence. But again, note the careful phrasing. They are not spontaneously or automatically that. It can be so when the overmind wants to reestablish that. But it's dealing basically from the diverse expression of these multiple potentialities. A purely impersonal existence and consciousness is true and possible, but also an entirely personal consciousness and existence, the impersonal divine Nirguna Brahman and the personal divine Saguna Brahman are here equal and coexistent aspects of the eternal. So, these are actually different schools of philosophy in India as well. From the pure Advaitic view, the non-dualistic view, that there is only at the basis of things this impersonal something, this that, this sheer existence. And when you look at it, you see that all of its qualities disappear. It is nirguna, without qualities. It is an absolute, sheer existence. And the personal divine, now here's personality, the existence, consciousness, bliss, is now an existent who is consciousness and experiences bliss and has qualities. He is saguna. He owns these qualities and expresses them. As he says, impersonality can manifest with person subordinated to it as a mode of expression, but equally, person can be the reality with impersonality as a mode of its nature. Both aspects of manifestation face each other in the infinite variety of conscious existence. So too, the Advaitin, as you climb the scale of experience towards utter reality, you may experience a kind of godhead, a personality along the way, but you leave it behind ultimately. You cut it and throw it aside as a limiting form to get into the infinity of that sheer existence. And that would be the position of Shankara. But when you look at the position of the Bhagavad Gita, which is a larger formulation of Vedanta, there is personal godhead at a certain level, and then there is a vast impersonality of sheer being, the Akshara Brahman, the unchanging, the eternal Brahman. But above that is a being, a Purushottama, an ultimate person, who uses the impersonality as a basis, as a vast reservoir of sheer being from which to impose upon a created cosmos his own will and order of things. And so all things are necessarily true, but you have to have a deep and also a hierarchical vision to be able to understand what is what in the substance of the universe. We'll see that it is to that that Sri Aurobindo tends in his formulation, his Purna Advaita. So if we have Advaita, non-dualism, Sri Aurobindo's Purna Advaita is full non-dualism, which denies nothing, which says this world is a real manifestation of that absolute. And there is nothing which does not contain the fullness of being. I wonder. I know, you don't wonder. What, to the mental reason, are irreconcilable differences present themselves to the overmind intelligence as coexistent correlatives? So, at the level of philosophic argument, these things are antagonistic to each other and can't be reconciled. One must be true, the other must be false. But to the overmind, it sees them both in terms of polarities, understands them as complementaries. Our mind, Sri Aurobindo writes, sees that all things are born from matter or material energy, exist by it, go back into it. It concludes that matter is the eternal factor, the primary and ultimate reality, Brahman. Or it sees all as born of life force or mind, existing by life or by mind, going back into the universal life or mind, and it concludes that this world is a creation of the cosmic life force or of a cosmic mind or logos. Or again, it sees the world and all things as born of, existing by, and going back to the real idea or knowledge will of the Spirit, or to the Spirit itself. And it concludes on an idealistic or spiritual view of the universe. So we have materialism, John Locke. We have a kind of élan vital of Henri Bergson. And we have the idea of an idea that creates the universe, Berkeley, perhaps Schopenhauer. It can fix on any of these ways of seeing, he says, but to its normal separative vision, each way excludes the others. So here at the level of mental philosophy, we can choose one, but we deny the truth of the other. Overmind consciousness perceives that each view is true of the action of the principle it erects. It can see that there is a material world formula, a vital world formula, a mental world formula, a spiritual world formula, and each can predominate in a world of its own, and at the same time all can combine in one world as its constituent powers. So in this way, Overmind brings a kind of creative sovereignty to what it sees and throws and casts into form. And this, by the way, would lead us to see insightfully into each philosophy's position and discover there a truth, that there is a gem at the core of every worldview. But it is not exhaustive. It is not final. It is not exclusive. All these philosophies have an insight. What is the largest vision of which we are capable? To what can we evolve? What is the all-reconciling oneness that absorbs all these multiplicities? This Overmind consciousness is a step towards that. Ultimately, we can't get to it until we aspire for, attain, and receive the supramental. But Sri Aurobindo is here describing the many stages of consciousness which lead back to the supramental, from the rational mind to the higher mind, to the illumined, to the intuitive, now to this overmental consciousness. And we find here an answer to the cosmic riddle. And so he's staying on this, and we'll be on this for quite some pages more. The self-formulation of conscious force on which our world is based, as an apparent inconscience that conceals in itself a supreme conscious existence and holds all the powers of being together in its inconscient secrecy, a world of universal matter realizing in itself life, mind, overmind, supermind, spirit, each of them in its turn taking up the others as means of its self-expression, matter proving in the spiritual vision to have been always itself a manifestation of the spirit, is to the overmind view a normal and easily realizable creation. So all this that we're evolving through, to get back to that view, is to it the natural perspective, because it is almost without perspective. It sees all things and understands their arrangement, their harmonic composition. In its power of origination, and in the process of its executive dynamis, Overmind is an organizer of many potentialities of existence, each affirming its separate reality, but all capable of linking themselves together in many different but simultaneous ways. A magician craftsman empowered to weave the multicolored warp and woof of manifestation of a single entity in a complex universe. Warp and woof, of course, in weaving. The warp is the long thread in a roll, the woof is the transverse, and the woof passes through the warp yarns to create cloth. I said what I do not know. If weaving were left to me, we would all be naked and chilly. In this simultaneous development of multitudinous, independent, or combined powers or potentials, there is yet, or there is as yet, no chaos, no conflict, no fall from truth or knowledge. So we're looking at things philosophically from the topmost view of the overmind. We have not spilled yet over into the ignorance. This next sentence is important to remember. The overmind is a creator of truths, not of illusions or falsehoods. What is worked out in any given overmental energism or movement is the truth of the aspect, power, idea, force, delight, which is liberated into independent action, the truth of the consequences of its reality in that independence. So it authenticates each strand that moves out from it, each ray that comes out of its own radiance, has authentic sanction to go forward and express itself as a power, as an illumination. Note what he said, as an aspect, well, that's part of being, as a power, as an idea, part of chit shakti, of force, that is shakti, as delight, that is ananda. So again, satchit ananda is getting thrown into cosmic order from its own triune transcendence. There is no exclusiveness, asserting each as the sole truth of being or the others as inferior truths. Each god knows all the gods and their place in existence. Each idea admits all other ideas and their right to be. Each force concedes a place to all other forces and their truth and consequences. No delight of separate fulfilled existence or separate experience denies or condemns the delight of other existence or other experience. So you can see at this range of being, at this height, with this breadth, all are part of a vast harmony. There is no enmity, there is no division, even though there is differentiation, a rich differentiation. But here in the overmind, oneness is felt as equality. The overmind is working from the substance of power to manifest and shape truth. He continues, the overmind is a principle of cosmic truth, and a vast and endless catholicity is its very spirit. Its energy is an all dynamism, as well as a principle of separate dynamisms. It is a sort of inferior supermind, although it is concerned predominantly not with absolutes, but with what might be called the dynamic potentials, or pragmatic truths of reality, or with absolutes mainly for their power of generating pragmatic or creative values. Although, too, its comprehension of things is more global than integral, since its totality is built up of global wholes or constituted by separate independent realities uniting or coalescing together. And although the essential unity is grasped by it and felt to be basic of things and pervasive in their manifestation, but no longer, as in the supermind, their intimate and ever-present secret, their dominating continent, the overt, constant builder of the harmonic whole of their activity and nature. So the overmind shapes and arranges according to a great vision, but it is not constituted, as it were, from within itself. It is concerned with empowering the manifestation. It is not, in a sense, drawing from the absolute as does the supermind. Rather, it receives the energy, the harmonic whole that the supramental has created, and uses that to distribute into the cosmos. And so it's global, it's vast, but it's not integral. In other words, it is not part of its own nature, you see. This is much more a demiurgic function, as what you've seen in Platonic philosophy. This is not the absolute creator. This is a level of creative energy and consciousness which is still true in its origin and true in its expression, but is not the utter truth of creation. If we would understand the difference of this global overmind consciousness from our separative and only imperfectly synthetic mental consciousness, we may come near to it if we compare the strictly mental with what would be an overmental view of activities in our material universe. To the overmind, for example, all religions would be true as developments of the one eternal religion. All philosophies would be valid, each in its own field, as a statement of its own universe view from its own angle. All political theories with their practice would be the legitimate working out of an idea force with its right to application and practical development in the play of the energies of nature. Ah, sounds lovely. In our separative consciousness, imperfectly visited by glimpses of catholicity and universality, these things exist as opposites. Each claims to be the truth and taxes the others with error and falsehood. Each feels impelled to refute or destroy the others in order that itself alone may be the truth and live. At best, each must claim to be superior, admit all others only as inferior truth expressions. So in the overmind, each perspective is valid. In the mind, each perspective strives to dominate and equality recedes. And just to put a time out on this for a second, as we're discussing the evolution of human consciousness and the nature of the mind, if in our current lives things look bleak, well, the silver lining of that is that we begin to see more and more clearly drawn the limits of rational discourse, that standing firm in any position without including the other position within yourself, without integrating it, making it part of yourself, leaves you in a divided state or with a coming cognitive dissonance if you think that you have assimilated what you have not, because it will shake itself loose. It will out. So better for us to honestly acknowledge this and outgrow the mind as a resolving agent and live from the power of the soul and reaching up into the harmonic heights of transcendence, which is our real home, and there find answers to the challenges of existence, whether with the way we behave with nature, the way we behave with each other, the way we behave with the divine. End of editorial. An overmental intelligence, he says, would refuse to entertain this conception or this drift to exclusiveness for a moment. It would allow all to live as necessary to the whole, or put each in its place in the whole, or assign to each its field of realization or of endeavor. This is because, in us, consciousness has come down completely into the divisions of the ignorance. Truth is no longer either an infinite or a cosmic whole with many possible formulations, but a rigid affirmation holding any other affirmation to be false because different from itself and entrenched in other limits. Our mental consciousness can indeed arrive in its cognition at a considerable approach towards a total comprehensiveness and catholicity. But to organize that in action and life seems to be beyond its power. So even when we have a glimpse, we have not the force to achieve it, to enforce it. Evolutionary mind, manifest in individuals or collectivities, throws up a multiplicity of divergent viewpoints, divergent lines of action, and lets them work themselves out side by side or in collision or in a certain intermixture. It can make selective harmonies, but it cannot arrive at the harmonic control of a true totality. Cosmic mind must have, even in the evolutionary ignorance, like all totalities, such a harmony, if only of arranged accords and discords. There is, too, in it an underlying dynamism of oneness, but it carries the completeness of these things in its depths, perhaps in a supermind-overmind substratum, but does not impart it to individual mind in the evolution, does not bring it, or has not yet brought it, from the depths to the surface. An overmind world would be a world of harmony. The world of ignorance in which we live is a world of disharmony and struggle. So there's the divergence. What characterizes our methods of knowledge and action as opposed to what that overmental view would be. And still, we can recognize at once in the overmind the original cosmic Maya, not a Maya of ignorance, but a Maya of knowledge, yet a power which has made the ignorance possible, even inevitable. This is not the divine Maya that Sri Aurobindo described when he was talking about the nature of the supermind, because Maya, as a real function of the divine consciousness, takes the infinity of Satchit Ananda and describes from it a limited representation, measures out from the infinite a beautiful finitude. And this is the cosmic consciousness that exists at the level of the supramental. Similarly, in the overmind, Maya has too a role. But now the divisions are sharper. It is not within the field of unity that this measuring out of the finite from the infinite occurs. It is at that cusp from which the finitude spews into the creation that we live with, mind, life, and matter. So here it is a power that makes the ignorance possible, where the reality of the self steps to the back and these powers, given full charge and responsibility for themselves, authentic energy, move out into energizing. As he says, for if each principle loosed into action must follow its independent line and carry out its complete consequences, the principle of separation must also be allowed its complete course and arrive at its absolute consequence. This is the inevitable descent, facilis descensus, which consciousness, once it admits the separative principle, follows till it enters by obscuring infinitesimal fragmentation, tutjena, into the material inconscience, the inconscient ocean of the Rig Veda. And if the one is born from that by its own greatness, it is still at first concealed by a fragmentary separative existence and consciousness which is ours and in which we have to piece things together to arrive at a whole. So here is this teeming possibility and this overmental consciousness releases all of these possibilities into action. And once released, even if we see that they're going to spill into error and into ignorance, we have no right to intervene. Let them go. Where can they go? All is Satchit Ananda, after all. Where can they go? How could they get lost? They may appear to be lost, but they will be self-found because they carry secretly within them this reality of Satchit Ananda. But they do dive, and they do, in their own understanding of things, arrive at an alienation from their own being. At least this is how it is experienced. The inevitable descent. This is actually taken, he's quoting from Virgil here. You know, Sri Aurobindo was a great Latin and Greek scholar, so here, facilis descensus averno. The descent to hell is easy, is what it says. Which consciousness, once it admits the separative principle, follows, gives it full play, until it arrives at this ultimate fragmentation, tutjena, the Sanskrit term. It's from the Rig Veda, that great hymn to creation, in which universal being is concealed by fragmentation, and the term connotes obscurity. It is neither sat nor asat, or that is how Shankara assesses it. Neither sat nor asat. Shankara or Sayana? I have to go and look again. So it's neither existence nor non-existence, because it has fallen into what the Greeks would call chaos, where there is no order of being, where there is only darkness and division. So above, unity, light, everything one, and here, smashed to smithereens at the basis of the cosmos. Ultimate disorder, or so it seems. It is inconscient. It is without consciousness. It is the originating ocean from which we then climb back. In that slow and difficult emergence, a certain semblance of truth is given to the dictum of Heraclitus, that war is the father of all things. For each idea, force, separate consciousness, living being, by the very necessity of its ignorance, enters into collision with others, and tries to live and grow and fulfill itself by independent self-assertion, not by harmony with the rest of existence. Now, Heraclitus, you know, 6th century pre-Socratic philosopher, is known for a couple of things. First, the idea of constant change. This is prior to the birth of Shakyamuni, who becomes Buddha in India, has this idea, does Heraclitus, that you cannot step into the same river twice. For one thing, you will have changed. For another thing, the river will have filled paths. It will never be the same river again. So all things are in a state of flux. He first gave utterance to that. But here Sri Aurobindo is referring to that aspect of his philosophy, which is called the unity of opposites, where all things exist not in themselves, because there is no single thing in the universe which is composed of a single state, but must have within it warring states. And it is this conflict, this pounding together of opposites, which causes the universe to come into being and work against each other. And that is how you grow. You grow by destroying another, by devouring it, or it destroys and devours you. So that's not the end of Sri Aurobindo's argument here. He quotes Heraclitus and then he moves on. Yet, there is still the unknown underlying oneness which compels us to strive slowly towards some form of harmony, of interdependence, of concording, of discords, of a difficult unity. So while he's described this collision of these seemingly separated portions of being here at the very foundation of the material cosmos, there is still that underlying oneness which compels them to come back together. That principle of oneness is drawing us upwards and out of this material nescience, if you will, to evolve back towards that oneness. But as we grow, we keep the materiality, we keep the vitality, we keep the mentality, but we transform as we grow each manifest vehicle. So first, a living body, and then a thinking living body, and now we're ready to outgrow that. Because this oneness keeps calling us, pressing us from within. What is that oneness? That oneness is that force that goes out at the start of creation and is here at the base before we arrive. Mother described it as the force of love. Love is at the basis of the cosmos. Love is an expressive power of oneness, insisting that we build from separativity back to unity. And we use association and mutuality as steps to gain ascension to that oneness again. So Sri Aurobindo continues, but it is only by the evolution in us of the concealed superconscient powers of cosmic truth and of the reality in which they are one that the harmony and unity we strive for can be dynamically realized in the very fiber of our being and all its self-expression, and not merely in imperfect attempts, incomplete constructions, ever-changing approximations. The higher ranges of spiritual mind have to open upon our being and consciousness, and also that which is beyond even spiritual mind must appear in us if we are to fulfill the divine possibility of our birth into cosmic existence. So these stages, these ranges of higher spiritual mind, we must evolve into before we evolve further into the supramental. So we must become capable of that divine thought, of that illuminated mentality where masses of flame-bright vision seizes our consciousness. And then to the power of swift discernment of truth wherever we throw our glance, which is intuition. And then finally, the vastness of the overmind, which reaches through these other powers of higher mentality, down towards mind, into life, into matter. So it is an unbroken chain of consciousness that we can ascend, and we can climb beyond the mind. We are not stuck here. We must become aware of these regions of our being, and we can do that best through the practice of an inner yoga, an adhyatma yoga, and by deepening our knowledge of self, of psyche, learn to transcend any figuration and become again universal in height and breadth, and again expressive of the divine cosmic will in our lives. So I think this is a good place to point and place our marks, because this on This is page 300. It's a good stopping point. We'll continue with another section next week. I think that is the 1st of November, is it not? And this is the last time that we'll meet during daylight saving time. So next week, we'll be back to standard time, which means in India, our friends won't have to get up at 5:30 in the morning to join this. They can get up at 6:30. What leisure. So, again, let us continue reading from Savitri. And now from the Book of the Double Twilight, The Dream Twilight of the Earthly Real. Thought there has revelation's sun-bright eyes, the word, a mighty and inspiring voice, enters truth's inmost cabin of privacy, and tears away the veil from God and life, then stretches the boundless finite's last expanse, the cosmic empire of the overmind, time's buffer state bordering eternity, too vast for the experience of man's soul. All here gathers beneath one golden sky. The powers that build the cosmos station take in its house of infinite possibility. Each god from there builds his own nature's world. Ideas are phalanxed like a group of suns, each marshaling his company of rays. Thought crowds in masses seized by one regard. All time is one body, space a single look. There is the Godhead's universal gaze, and there the boundaries of immortal mind. The line that parts and joins the hemispheres closes in on the labor of the gods, fencing eternity from the toil of time. In her glorious kingdom of eternal light, all ruler, ruled by none, the truth supreme, omnipotent, omniscient, and alone, in a golden country keeps her measureless house. In its corridor she hears the tread that comes out of the unmanifest, never to return, till the unknown is known and seen by men. Above the stretch and blaze of cosmic sight, above the silence of the wordless thought, formless creator of immortal forms, nameless, investitured with the name divine, transcending time's hours, transcending timelessness, the mighty mother sits in lucent calm and holds the eternal child upon her knees, attending the day when he shall speak to fate. There is the image of our future's hope. There is the sun for which all darkness waits. There is the imperishable harmony. The world's contradictions climb to her and are one. There is the truth of which the world's truths are shreds, the light of which the world's ignorance is the shade, till truth draws back the shade that it has cast, the love our hearts call down to heal all strife, the bliss for which the world's derelict sorrow yearns. Thence comes the glory sometimes seen on earth, the visits of Godhead to the human soul, the beauty and the dream on nature's face. Namaste. Jai Ma.